We made this. Hello and welcome to We Buy Records. I'm Paul Field and I'm joined as ever by the lovely Mr. Tim Scullion. Hello Tim, how are you today?
I'm very well. I'm looking at the sky in front of me and it's a beautiful blue sky day with a few white fluffy clouds, and the guy who was using his electric machinery in his back garden up until a few moments ago has now stopped. So all is looking well.
Excellent. Full disclosure, we did actually record some of this episode previously, but I forgot to press record.
So that means I have completely messed it up on at least one occasion with the pod, and now so has Paul. So we're even. So it's okay.
We are even. Should we crack on with a little bit of housekeeping, Tim, and thank lovely listeners who's bought us a coffee.
Indeed. Thank you so much, anyone who has done so. It's a website called coffee.com, ko-fi.com, and we're at / We Buy Records, and it's a kind of tipping thing, isn't it? So you can give someone a couple of quid if you like what they're doing and you want to support them and cover some of their overheads, and some of our listeners have done just that. Paul, who are we thanking?
So it's big shout out and thanks to Steve Fenton, Tom Berry, Uncle Beanie, who says we should use it to buy some best bitter, Vinyl Car Booty, Matt Jones, Daryl Wilkes.
Also Medwin, Danny Boy, somebody who's called themselves just Somebody, Andy Olcock, Michael, Luke Russell, and the mysteriously named Kofi Supporter. I know it's supposed to be pronounced coffee, but it's not coffee. K-O-F-I isn't coffee, is it? It's Kofi. I can't...
Kofi Annan Supporter.
Yeah, that's who it is. Definitely. Well done, Paul.
I stole that joke because we did that in the first take, which we didn't record.
I said it first time and then I thought, thank God this take has fucked up so that stupid joke isn't going to make it into the final edit.
I think it's Danny Box, not Danny Boy, but I'm not, I could be wrong. That could be me mistyping. Who knows? But thank you anyway, Danny. It's really kind of you. What have we got for the rest of housekeeping, Tim? So we went to a record fair.
Yes, we both went to the same one in separate cars. In Crawley. So that was my first record fair since the beginning of the COVID crisis. So probably my first record fair in 9 months. It wasn't quite as exciting as I hoped it would be.
I thought that it was fairly poor, to be honest, in terms of, first of all, pricing. I mean, some of the prices, like, you know, I think I spotted two copies of Kilimanjaro. Did Teardrop Explodes?
Yeah, fiver, 6 quid.
Well, yeah, I literally just bought a copy in a charity shop in Bexhill, which had some that had just opened for, I think, for £2. And I saw one copy for 10, and I saw one copy for 20 or 25. I saw another guy who had some 12 inches where he had quite a lot of Shades of Rhythm 12s. These are, as much as they're great records, you're quite likely to still find those in a charity shop or pound bin.
And how much was he asking?
£10 each.
This is a trend that I think I've noticed with some record sellers where a tenner, it seems to be the lowest they'll go for anything that they consider remotely interesting. So, you know, all of their stock that they think is any good is 10, 15, 20 or 25. Whereas in reality, this stuff should be 5, 7, 8, 10, 12, you know, and I've seen that more and more because, hey, did you know something? Vinyl's back. Did you know that, Paul?
I did, because there were two items I wanted to buy. There was a B-movie album, Discogs record-selling price for a brand new sealed copy that someone found down the back of a cupboard after 30 years was £9. The average is 7, and he had it on a display wall for 25. And a slightly tatty Madonna promo 12-inch, same scenario. It was worth six or seven, and again, they wanted 25. Who's paying these prices?
It's not as bad as that one a bit nearer to home before lockdown, where you found someone trying to sell a Madonna 12. How much was it? Were they asking like 7,500 quid? Remember you lost your shit over that. I think you even emailed the organizer of the record fair just to be like, listen, this cannot stand.
It detracts from the whole fair.
Of course it does.
If you've got people...
Yeah, completely taking the piss.
Well, is he taking the piss or does he not know what he's doing?
But I mean, I've seen, you know, I think I mentioned in a previous pod, I sort of found in a real record shop someone trying to sell a recent bootleg Pink Floyd album that was a bootleg of, say, a Greek press. And he was trying to call it rare Greek press, 60 quid. And it's a 15 quid, 20 quid, modern day, 180 gram, probably badly pressed bootleg. So sometimes they do know what they're doing and they're chancing their arm, Paul.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of chancing going on. How did you find it? Have you got anything to add about the record fair? Bit grumpy?
Yeah, mostly quite grumpy and boring. There was one guy who I was looking at his, he had a big thing of 3 quid albums and he was just spoiling for a fight. It was really odd. So first of all, I pulled out the ones that I wanted to look at the condition that looked kind of interesting. They weren't amazing, but I thought, well, 3 quid, if the condition's okay, then great. And I sort of went and sat by the side of his stall so as not to block the stall to look at them. And he came over and he said, if you wouldn't mind coming back up and looking at them on top of the records, please. Basically accusing me of, I don't know what he thought I was going to do, but he, you know.
Thievery, Tim. You look shifty.
Yeah, he might have just shouted, I do not trust you.
It's not like you were dressed like a bandit wearing a mask.
Nice one, Paul.
Boom.
You're on fire today. And so then I started looking through them. And as you do, when you've pulled out a load of stuff, the way I do it is I pull out stuff that looks interesting. And then once it's all pulled out, the next phase of the process is I go through them and then I reject ones that have, you know, that have had a child be sick on or whatever. And so I was rejecting quite a lot of them because a lot of them were absolutely horrific and should have gone in the bin. And he just said, what's your criteria for 3 quid records then, mate? And I said, well, if I fancy them and if they're not too trashed, probably same as anybody else. And he came back, none of my records are trashed. So I thought, okay. Just fuck off. Stop talking to me, basically. Just let me be.
I've seen you when you're in the zone checking records. Even I wouldn't talk to you.
Exactly. That was it. I had my zone face on and I did not want to be trifled with, but this guy would not leave it alone. Anyway, he was a wanker.
Last little bit of housekeeping then is that we were back on the wireless, the We Buy Records radio show on Radio Free Matlock. If you want to listen to me and Tim bickering for 2 hours while we play records from our own collections, just go to the Google and type We Buy Records Radio and you'll find it. It's on Mixcloud.
It's fun, isn't it?
And thank you ever so much. Yes, thank you to everyone at Radio Free Matlock for having us back again. I think the next one will be around Christmas time, Tim. So we could have, that'll be fun.
Christmas special, Tijuana Christmas.
Yes.
We could just play the whole album of Tijuana Christmas, maybe twice.
Should we do the news?
Definitely. So, Paul, news this week is that it's yet another Record Store Day drop in a few days. Because, you know, there was Record Store Day. Then there was Record Store Day Part 2. Yeah?
Yep.
Do you reckon that there's space for a Part 3?
There is. It's upcoming, isn't it? Drop 3.
Fuck's sake.
You went to Drop 1.
I did.
Locally. I went to Drop 2. Kind of by accident in Essex, just to get one item. And we did ask on Twitter what other people had done.
Yeah, we were interested to see if just on a based on a little straw poll of our listeners, are people actually going to these record store days? Did they go this year? Did you go to both? Is it a disastrous idea to spread them out into lots of little bits? I was genuinely surprised, Paul, by the results. I think we've had about 150 people answer.
We have.
And have you got the figures there in front of you? So I was expecting it to be kind of, you know, probably a majority of our listeners would have taken part in some way in day one. And then I was expecting a decent drop-off for then day two. But what's the actual result?
So about a third of our listeners took part in the first one. Only 7% solely took part in the second one, and 14% did both, but 56% didn't do anything at all. However, a few people did point out how poorly I worded the question, because it didn't take into account those. There were a few people who answered they didn't go, but they did buy some stuff online. But still, basically half of people didn't bother.
Yeah, so not as, you know, the take up wasn't what I expected. I wonder what it's been in previous years. Can we possibly go, is it possible to go back in time now on Twitter and ask past Twitterers what they did? Is that, can you do that? Okay. So I reckon that's not enough Record Store Days. What I think we should do is another one on Black Friday. What do you reckon?
There is another one on Black Friday, as you well know.
Hooray! Oh, so four in a year. Oh, that'll work, won't it? So this is the news, is that not only is there a third one, in a month's time there's a fourth one, and it's called the Record Store Day Black Friday. So it's mostly American, but I'm pretty sure that we're getting on imports. We're going to be getting a lot of these titles as well, I think, here in Britain.
Yes.
What's caught your eye, Paul, on the
Well, I've had a look through, and there was nothing that I would want to buy personally, but the item I've picked out to highlight is the Rolling Stones' Let It Bleed.
Very good album.
I'm going to impart a little bit of information, and you're going to guess how much the reissue costs. So the first bit of information is, it's a reissue, Tim. How much for a reissue of Let It Bleed?
£22.
Okay, I can tell you it's higher than that. However, it's one of the reasons is there are only 900 copies.
Ooh, £35.
I can tell you it's higher than that because all of the copies are different. Fred's standing there injecting different colour each time it presses. So they're all going to be unique.
I'm going to go mad.
Go on.
$60.
No, it's listed on Banquet as for a UK import as £158.
Wait, no. So it's a box set.
No, it's a collector's edition, Tim. Don't get confused. But there's only 900 of them, and they're all individually like pressed on a slightly different colour.
Now, can you imagine in 1993 there being a Rolling Stones vinyl pressing of Let It Bleed in a variety of colours as a bit of a limited thing, and the RRP being 160 quid? Like, that, seriously, the record label would have been laughed out of fucking town.
Yeah, for sure.
And now people just go, well, I wouldn't buy it. It's expensive for me, but if somebody wants it, it's collectible, it's vinyl, colour vinyl, yeah, fair enough. It's not fair enough, is it?
No, can I just add in here, Tim? There's a couple of other people who've been at it this week, which is not related to Black Friday.
But just as bad.
Well, Mr. Nick Cave has a one-sided 7-inch out.
So it's going to cost half what a regular 7-inch would cost, right, if it's one-sided?
It's £30. It's one of a set of four. But here's the kicker. Not only is that price fairly egregious, but the postage within the UK is £11.90.
Wait, so it's a UK release?
Yep.
And to post it to your door, a 7-inch is 12 quid?
Yep.
On the official Nick Cave site?
Oh, yes. I'm not making this up.
Can you imagine, Paul, in 1993, Nick Cave releasing a single-sided 7-inch, asking you 30 quid for it and asking for 12 quid postage? He'd have been laughed out of town.
He would.
What the fucking hell is going on?
It gets worse. Now, are you familiar with a bloke called Paul McCartney? I understand he was in a popular beat combo called The Beatles.
I genuinely love him.
Do you?
Yes. So this better be kind to him, because I love him. He's embarrassing as hell, and I do not love his interviews. But I love his music, up to and including about 1981. I think he's brilliant.
Well, he has people, I suspect, does Mr. McCartney. He's a big enough artist to have what they call
people.
I think his people have given him some rather duff advice.
Well, the thing is, Paul, vinyl's back. I don't know if you knew
that. He is back. Now, he's got a new album out called Three, is that correct? Or coming out?
McCartney Three, yes.
Somebody somehow has convinced him to do a limited edition variant of 333 copies, made from recycled copies of his previous albums.
No way, that's quite cool, isn't it?
It is quite cool. Did you see how many I said there were? 333. Now, I'm not an expert.
Yeah, the desire is going to be higher.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to say that probably will stimulate demand quite significantly.
Yes.
And I can tell you that there's a copy on eBay already. It was to buy it was 50 quid, which, you know, that's fair enough. I get it. It's a gimmick. It's a kind of maybe almost like an art project. And they were sold to the public at £50. The first copy already on eBay with 6 days still to run is at £820. And there's another copy up for £5,000, buy it now. Well, I say that because when it was there earlier, I didn't see it now. So maybe it's already gone.
Fuck's sake. What can we do?
Major recording artists doing projects like this are out of their mind. I don't know who's advising them. It's a terrible idea. That is one of 8 different variants for that album. 8. And a lot of those are very limited. It just pisses me off because your average Joe who collects him is now stuffed.
Because they can't get the best version of it.
No.
Whereas if there had been maybe 3,000 copies, do you see?
Correct.
McCartney 3, 3,000 copies, special limited edition, then you've got a fair chance of getting a copy if you're a big fan of his. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I totally agree. But don't worry, you can get one of the other 7 variants, Paul, so you're laughing ultimately. How many variants do you reckon you're going to get?
The last thing I heard him do was the frog song, Tim.
That was for children. It has its place. Shut up.
It was offered that was offered without comment.
Yeah, but listeners couldn't see your face, though.
Is it dumb? Dum dum, is that the one? Dum,
yeah.
Dum dum, yeah.
I'm never going to choose to listen to it ever again. But I don't. It doesn't upset me that it exists.
Did he do something with Michael Jackson?
He did a couple of things with Michael Jackson. Yeah, ooh. He did. He did some singles. He did Say 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 and The Girl Is Mine.
There you go. I remember those.
Mm.
So that's
catchy.
Is that after the frog song?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, there you go. So that's the last thing I remember then.
Similar era, but I think after. So he clawed back his credibility for you after the frog song. The frog chorus, we all stand together to give it its correct name. Oh, I love him. I love Paul McCartney.
My mate actually managed to get his autograph. It was sadly on a CD rather than an album because he doesn't sign anything, apparently, or very, very rarely.
So how did your mate get him to sign a CD?
Oh, he was interviewing him and they got on quite well. And he said, go on, just for you. And he wrote out,
wow,
to Ali, boom, 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 yeah,
that's nice. See, I told you he's brilliant. Love you, Paul McCartney.
Sorry, well, we've diverted, obviously, we always do, but what did you pick anything out from Black Friday?
Oh god, yeah, we were talking about that ages ago. I did. I know that you were pouring some scorn with your Rolling Stones pick, but I've actually found on the Black Friday Record Store Day list a good reissue that is valid, Paul.
Lots of positivity, Tim.
Yeah, you've got double thumbs up. In fact, very Paul McCartney-esque double thumbs up there, Paul, so thank you. Do you know the actor Mila Jovovich?
I do, yes.
She's good, isn't she?
She's very good.
So before she was an actor, she was a model. And when she was a model, she also attempted to be a pop star. And she did an album in 1994 called The Divine Comedy. And it was only ever originally pressed on vinyl in Greece for the Greek market. And it's now very hard to find. And it was a flop on release, but it's since been seen to be a bit of a Kate Bush, Tori Amos-esque art rock, world music, folk pop hidden gem. And if you wanted to buy a copy of that Greek pressing, Paul, have a guess how much you'd have to pay to get that.
180 quid?
300 quid.
Whoa!
For a really top-end copy. So that has been reissued now, I think, on coloured vinyl for Black Friday, and hopefully it's going to be less than 30 quid, we can hope. So, you know, that I think for me, that's what it should be about. It should be about finding things that where the original is hard to find, or, you know, the original was maybe like a bad mastering job or something like that, or, you know, it was just sort of some obscure release. And now here's the chance to do a lovely version of it. And it might be niche, so it's kind of, it's for the fans, which is why it would be a Record Store Day thing and not just a regular release. And I think that's what it was. It used to be, you know, like demos by some little indie band. And look, we found some recordings we did in the early 80s. We're going to press them up for you for Record Store Day. Here you go. To me, that's the spirit of it. And I feel that we've lost that personally. But this just gives me a little reminder of the kind of stuff you used to get, where it was a kind of a niche thing that is long lost. And here it is again. Sad, isn't it? Maybe next year it'll be good again. Maybe next year they could fix it by having one every... I know. What if we had Record Store Day next year?
Once a quarter.
No, every day. And then it would be true, the thing that everyone says all the fucking time, that every day is Record Store Day. It would actually come true, Paul. How about that? Paul, we've had a great tale in our email inbox. And by the way, if anyone wants to drop us an email, you can. webuyrecordspod@gmail.com. And we've had a sort of semi-confession, semi-just brilliant story, which I really wanted to share with the listeners. So here we go. You ready?
Oh, I am.
Craig writes, when working in a secondhand record shop in the 90s, I agreed to do a home valuation off the books. I turned up at this posh house in Islington. It quickly became clear that the person who'd invited me round was in the process of leaving, bags packed, etc., and the records were not his. I started going through the wall of LPs, sorting into piles, but the bloke seemed uninterested and kept quacking on about this Bob Dylan cassette. He kept making and receiving agitated phone calls, saying, "No, nothing yet." About 1 hour in, and I'm elbow deep in records that he's clearly not interested in. And all the while, he keeps casually slash not casually mentioning this Bob Dylan cassette. In the end, I asked him what he was on about. It turns out his partner was ex-BBC, and one day, years back, had fished a master tape from a skip of an unreleased Bob Dylan recording session. Okay, so now I'm interested, and now I know he doesn't mean a cassette, but a master reel. A little while later, he's out of the room and I'm thumbing through shelves. And guess what I found? For a brief second, I held it in my hand and weighed up whether or not to stick it in my bag. Remember, this guy still thinks he's looking for a cassette. I deliberated for too long and he came back into the room. He said, "Is that it?" I said, "I think so." He got on the phone, rang someone, and said, "We've got it." Then he gave me 100 quid in cash and kicked me out of the house. From finding the tape to being out on the street was perhaps 30 seconds. That's how quick it was. I often wonder whether, given this situation again, I would pinch it. I also wonder whatever happened to that tape. Thank you, Craig. That is an absolute peach of a story.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Craig.
Paul, I'm thrilled to announce that we have a very special guest on the show now, bringing his years of judicial expertise in the world of record collecting bullshit. Please, will you be upstanding for his honour, Judge Nearmint Minus, QC.
Judge Nearmint Minus.
My lad, if I may, the accused is from social media, the Twitter, a Mr. Black Celebration Tonight, who is from the Americas. It is alleged that on or around the 19th of September, he did purchase a reissued white vinyl LP of the motion picture soundtrack to Bright Lights Big City. My lad, it stars Michael J. Fox, who was a popular matinee idol in the 1980s.
I am aware of his work.
My lad, it is the position of the prosecution that Mr. Celebration Tonight does not in fact own the original vinyl release, yet claims to collect one of the artists featured, a Depeche Mode.
Yes, I'm aware of the Dave Gahan of that group. Feeble man, fond of the horse.
Further, it is our assertion that he paid £20 for this white vinyl reissue, whereas the original is available for just £2. It is further alleged that on or around the 19th of September, Mr. Celebration Tonight did follow up his original egregious crime by purchasing Earth Girls Are Easy, reissued on orange vinyl, again for the astronomical sum of £20, despite not owning the original, that is just £3. I submit to the court that Mr. Celebration Tonight is guilty of crimes against record collecting by supporting these frivolous reissues, and would ask for the most severe penalty this court can bestow upon the accused, Your Honour.
Mr. Celebration Tonight, you have been found guilty by this court of supporting the illicit trade of pointless reissues. You shall, upon release from this court, attend your nearest record shop, where you will purchase the Record Store Day 2020 reissue of The Sign by Swedish trio Ace of Base. You will listen to that record, and that record alone, for a period of 3 days.
Judge Near Mint Minus there, Paul. He's a strange judge, isn't he?
I love Judge Near Mint Minus. He's my new hero, Tim.
If any listeners have any cases that they think need to be brought against them or a friend in the world of...
Yes, preferably a friend.
In the world of dubious record purchasing and selling, please do get in touch with us either on Twitter or via our email. It's all just a bit of fun.
So, Tim, I've been on my travels again.
Where'd you go this time, Typhoid Mary?
Yeah, I popped back to Serbia for the third time this year, actually. And whilst I was there, my lovely friend Slobodan said he would take me to the flea market.
Oh, that's exciting. Flea market in Serbia.
I know. It was over the other side of the Danube in a place called Zemun. Virtually every stall is run by a gypsy. It really was kind of like a scene from Borat with some of the, you know, he was telling me off for this, you mustn't pay too much to the gypsy and all this kind of stuff. And I found it really weird. So 4:30 in the morning, eventually get into the world's grumpiest cab because he was asleep when I rang him. Zooming across the Danube, the lights of the city. It was, you know, it was quite cool. I'm sure if you did it every week, it wouldn't be. But for me, it was like, wow, this is exciting. Get to the market. There are stalls with whole pigs being roasted on them.
Oh, wow.
There are people selling their clothes in the street. Just a weird mishmash of fruit stalls, veg stalls, chaos, noise. And then we got to the what we would call the boot sale bit. And it really was just a huge, huge paved area. What they refer to as the cages. But it was just full of gypsies selling or tap. And in amongst them were indeed records.
Was there a decent number of record sellers or just a few?
There was. I mean, because I got slightly lost finding Slobodan, we got there a little bit later than we should have done.
Uh-huh.
I think he'd already actually been round quickly because he was already clutching a bag of records. There was quite a large stack of records and they were being rinsed by other diggers.
But you think Serbian diggers?
Yeah, they were local. Slobodan knew them because he was speaking to them straight away.
So you were the only outsider there, weren't you, pretty much, surely?
Yes. I still found stuff, you know, like Yugoslavian Devo. Ooh. For 200 dinar,
and what?
Which is, what, £1.50?
Wow.
So, you know, very, very rare classical album. which it needs to get clean and stuff. I don't know where to grade it, because you have to remember this was in the dark.
But was it still dark?
Yes.
Oh my God.
And it's hard to grade a record in the dark. But there was a classical album I picked up, like a Columbia red label with a woman violinist on it. It goes for about £100.
A woman violinist, Paul?
No, but I from what I can gather, a lot of these early classical albums, if there's a female artist on them, they're worth more money.
Ooh, because there was loads of fellas doing it.
Exactly. So it was a more unusual for a woman to be recorded doing this. That's my theory, because when I've looked, some of them are worth nothing, some are worth a lot, and that was the only thing I could think of, because I don't know anything about classical music, so I'm sure someone can write in and tell us.
So did she have her tits out on the cover?
No, Tim.
Right, okay.
It was from...
Please note, listeners, that was what we call ironic sexism. I don't do real sexism, I only do ironic sexism, which is totally allowed.
I know. You actually wear a badge saying piss off sexist twats or something, don't you?
Something like that, yeah.
So, there were other sellers with records haggling. You're basically told this. Slobodan said to me, do not pay more than 200 dinars to the gypsy for a record, because if you do, when I go back when you're not there, they will want that money again. So, to me, paying £1.50... I thought was crazy. And I at one point I did give someone 300 dinars, which is £2.20. And I genuinely got a little bit of a...
bit of a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. Because it makes problems for them.
Paul, did you, just to get serious for a moment, did you sense that there was a tension between the sort of non-Romani Serbians and then these more obviously wearing sort of more gypsy clothing, Romani clothing type people?
There was a tension between the native Serbs and the Romani stroke gypsy people, for sure.
There was.
Yeah, definitely. Well, tension, there was...
Well, did it strike you as odd that all of the sellers were gypsies?
Yes, incredibly odd. I found the whole experience very strange, yeah.
I don't understand why is selling at a flea market the domain of the sort of these Romani people and not Serbians, you know, not... sort of the white Serbians. I don't quite get it.
I think there was... I don't know if he was... what his background was, but there was a guy, as we were walking around on the way out, who had a mint condition Beatles album sat in full view of everyone on the floor, and this was now daylight, and he had quite a few good records, and again, they were 200 dinars each.
Fuck. That's really strange.
It's so weird. But he spoke perfect English. I don't know, Tim. I don't know. I didn't... It's too complicated to start getting into asking them questions about that kind of stuff, because it's the, you know...
Next time you're there, I think you need to start digging. You need to, not digging for records, but digging for the truth.
The best bargain of the day were two copies of I think 1912 and 1917 I got them from, a French magazine called Le Illustration, which is this huge, heavy paper thing full of... all these beautiful illustrations from the time. These things were genuine antiques, over 100 years old. And I think I gave her £3 for the pair.
Wow.
And I took them back to my friend who's an antiques dealer and said, there's a ton of stuff in here, these illustrations you can rescue and frame, and you've got 100-year-old illustration. Probably you've got 30 or 40 of them, plus all the beautiful original adverts from French businesses.
It's often the ads that I like best in old magazines.
Advertising all weird stuff, yeah.
Brilliant.
Incredible. A genuine antique sitting on the floor for a few pounds.
Wow. So do you think you'll go again?
Yeah, that was the... I think they were warming me up, because I think that's the small one. There's a much bigger one, a more serious one. But also, it was quieter because it depends on the police, because normally the road to where the official site is rammed, both sides of the road, with people selling. But depending on how much police activity will depend on if they're there or not, because sometimes they get moved on.
So the official site is legit, but all the surrounding area is not legit, but people just set up and sell anyway.
Yes, that's why I got lost, because when I arrived, I asked the guy in the paper shop, where do I go? He said, I'll go walk through the fruit and veg market, come out the back, you'll see rows and rows and rows of people selling stuff, walk through those and you'll get to
it. But they weren't there.
So I got lost. But plenty of records and super, super cheap. Did find James Last.
Yes. Did you buy it?
No, I did not.
It wasn't what not. It wasn't the good James Last.
They had the English James Last and German James Last, but not the good James Last.
Damn it. We get letters on our show.
We do.
And every now and then we like to try and, you know, position ourselves as figures of authority and answer questions that are put to us. And we're going to do that now. Question here from Matt, who asks, my record player is pushing 2 years old and a lot of my records are recently sounding staticky. Is it my winter clothes creating static, or do I maybe need a new needle? How often should I be changing it? Recommendations, please.
Depends how often you use it. So for me at home, we tend to only play records at the weekend and change it once a year.
And you wear a suit, don't you, to listen?
No, but you have a shop, so you must use...
Yeah, we burn through needles. Yeah. Play them, you know, 8 hours a day, almost every day. We get through, I don't know, 5 needles a year, something like that, maybe. And we also have to replace, we've got a customer turntable as well. So probably all in for the shop, we might get through 6 or 7 or 8 needles in a year.
It also depends what you're using as well, because I use one of those Autoform Pro head shells that you just, it just literally screws into the Technics. There's no messing about, and they play absolutely anything, because you use Autoform as well.
Yeah, we've got an Autoform, is it a Red Dot, which is kind of budget but really good on one of our decks, and then we've got Audio Technica, which again really budget but really solid little cartridges and styluses. I just think replace them. So I was listening to a slightly sort of scruffy Smith's record that was clean, but that got a lot of surface scuffs on it, and it was playing unbelievably crackly, and it was sort of, and it had lost a bit of treble. And I just thought, I'm sure this record shouldn't sound this bad, and replaced the needle with a new one, sort of £24 Audio Technica stylus. And all the crackle was gone. The treble had come back. It sounded beautiful. So it sounds to me like often if a record is sounding a bit staticky and a bit crackly when you know it shouldn't, it is probably actually the needle.
One of the first records I ever bought from you when you had your first shop was a 12-inch on Strictly Rhythm. And I didn't recognise it. And I said, oh, can you play this for me? And you put it on and it jumped. And I think you had it up at 8 and you said, oh, well, that's worthless. You can have it for 2. And of course, when I brought it home and played it on my Autoform Pro, it did not jump. Which I kind of knew was going to happen, but I didn't know you then, so I didn't say anything.
It does make a difference. I mean, the whole thing of setting up your turntable and choosing how much tracking force and, you know, and what kind of needle you want based on, like, you know, if you're playing in a club, You want a big tank of a deck with quite a heavy needle that will just play anything. If you're playing classical at home, you want the opposite. But it's a whole thing, isn't it? I don't know. I'm not an expert.
Yeah, we're not. We should point out, because we often get asked questions about record decks and things like this. This is just personal experience, because it's not something we really know about.
We'll give you answers anyway, so that it seems like we know what we're doing.
Oh yeah, of course we will. Yeah, otherwise we've got no content, Tim.
Oh yeah.
Billy Edwards asks, what do you think happens to all the new vinyl that doesn't get sold? Not so much in bricks and mortar places, as they can put them in reduction sections and take them to fairs, but what do Asda, HMV, etc. do with it? I suspect it may, for Asda and things like that, it may well just end up in record fairs, because I see new stock in record fairs all the time, and it's fairly common stuff that
pop music,
I have no interest in. Mm. Yeah,
and I think that that didn't so much used to be the case. That now you'll see things like the previous album by Girls Aloud or Keane or U2 or Coldplay. That, you know, it's not quite the latest thing, but it's a recent one, still sealed, possibly with a Stanley knife on the cover to show that it's, you know, a deleted dead stock. But I don't think you used to see them, and I wonder if they're just sort of stuff is being palleted up and flogged to dealers. It's a good question. I don't know if anyone's got any insight. Where does all of that Asda stock go if it doesn't sell?
We haven't got time for everything today, but there is a quick follow-up from Billy here that says, on box sets. Do you have any, and why did you buy them?
We've got a Paul Robeson box set, which we got for free.
The bloke from Neighbours?
No. I don't think we've got any others, really. I've got a few fancy records that came in a box, like All Things Must Pass by George Harrison. But that doesn't count, does it? No, box set. No, I haven't. We did do something really naughty, and I don't know, Paul, what you think of this. We got a Fela Kuti box set of five or six albums in a nice box, and we threw the box away and sold the albums separately. But in my defence, Your Honour, they were all previously available albums individually that had just been put into a box. There was nothing unique about the albums. They were the exact same pressings as you would have got outside of a box set.
Oh, okay, that's fair enough. Yeah, no, I don't have any issue with that. I think I've got a DAF box set which is like that. It's just the standard albums in a box. With some, as ever though, Tim, with some printed matter.
Oh yes, there was printed matter in this box as well. I chucked that away.
There you go.
It's terrible, isn't it? I did feel a bit bad about it, but I thought, you know, we can sell the albums for the same price as this stupidly expensive box set, and people then get to choose which album they want. Rather than having to spend £100 on a box set, they can spend £15-18 on the albums. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean,
can I be absolved of my sin?
Yeah, of course you can.
It's like a little impromptu confessional corner.
I will just say this. I do have some box sets. I've never opened or played any of them. And I only bought them because they were on offer.
Does anyone like box sets?
I don't.
This is going to be really, you know, playing into cliche hands here. But I think that, like, dads like box sets. £50 man likes a box set, doesn't he? You're familiar with £50 man, aren't you, Paul?
No, go on, tell me who's £50 man.
£50 man is a concept which I think, well, it became a bit more known probably in the early noughties, mid-noughties. And it was the idea of the kind of bloke who will go into HMV or Virgin or whatever with £50 to spend, and he'll buy a CD, a record, and a DVD box set.
Got you.
And he's £50 man. And I think £50 man would be tempted by a box set. Hot box set chat.
What's the next letter, Tim?
Tom Berry writes, I was asked a question about my records the other day. How many of your records have you never played? I came to the conclusion that it's about 30% of them. That's because I have two hobbies, buying records and playing records, and they are very different things. Is this unusual? He says, well, Tom, you are unusual, but it's in a good way. In this case, I think I agree with you. I like acquiring and finding records, and then I also like listening to records, and I think they are two different things, and I think I have an awful lot of records that I have not yet listened to. How about you, Paul?
I've listened to most of mine, or some of most of them.
Oh, hang on, though. Probably only... No, yours are 12-inch singles. That's piss easy. That takes 4 minutes. Yeah, it's not fair. Your answer doesn't count.
Yeah, that's probably why I can get through them quite quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
Of an evening. Over the weekend, we'll play out the records we've got from the week, but more often than not, they're all 12 inches.
Yeah, imagine how long it would take me to get through the records I've found in a week. Jason Shepherd, Paul, has got a really thorny question. Do I sell all of my old indie and alternative rock CD singles that I've collected from the time when I was convinced that CDs were the way forward?
I would sit and spend an hour or two going through Discogs, because CD singles, even though you never believe me, Tim, like cassette singles, are quite often have more value than the albums they came from. In terms of CD.
Yeah, in terms of CD. Okay, that's really good advice. Sit there, find out for yourself. Some will be worth a tenner, a lot will be worth 60 pence, and I'm sure would be very happy in a charity shop. I just hate them. I hate CD singles. I hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them. Don't bring them to me.
Jared Barry wants to know, why are my only two negative Discogs reviews from people who paid £1.50 for them? He goes on to say that both records were fine, but the corner of a generic sleeve was grey and rubbed. And the other one didn't like a bit of sellotape on the sleeve. Also, why am I so furious about this?
Right, so he got negative feedback on Discogs because the generic plain sleeve that a single came in was a bit rubbed.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
At £1.50.
So the answer to that is the same answer we've given before about this, which is that you can get negative feedback removed if it is bullshit.
Yes.
And all you have to do, as I understand it, is don't be a dickhead to people when you message them, but message people to say, oh, that feedback is a bit unfair given XYZ, because Discogs, and then basically you flag with Discogs, you can flag to get feedback removed. Just don't fall into the trap of being really hostile and rude and aggressive to the idiot that gave you negative feedback, because Discogs can and will look at your interactions. And if they can see that you're not a fruitcake, they will remove the negative feedback.
Yeah, just to clarify, all you need to do is, if you've had negative feedback without any communication from the buyer to say there's a problem, can you resolve it, that automatically qualifies you to have that feedback removed. They must reach out to you if there's a problem before leaving negative feedback. That's the rules.
Which they never do.
No.
So I think a lot of negative feedback can happily be removed. People just don't realise it. Is it time, Paul, for one of my favourite bits of the show?
It is. We've got a confession in here.
Paul's Confessional Corner.
Earlier today, I was in my local thrift store here in Los Angeles, and there was a copy of Neil Young's Decade, a huge gatefold affair.
Triple album.
Well, there was also the sleeve, and the sleeve only, for the original soundtrack of the film Less Than Zero. I really like this sleeve. It really conveys that mid-80s brattish LA mix of wealth and uneasy ennui.
And cocaine.
The LP itself is Pants, by the way. Def Jam were involved in the production and used the film to shield their roster rather than score the film. Anyway, I wanted the sleeve. I want to frame it, but wasn't going to pay full price for it. I thought about asking the volunteers for a reduction, but I could see a whole world of chaos happening there. So instead, I snuck it inside the Decade gatefold. I paid for the Neil Young, but as I left, the sudden realisation that I had just stolen from a Chazza came upon me like a dark shadow. I will atone for my crime by making a donation, but how much, and will that see me forgiven? What do you think about this? Stealing empty sleeves from Chazzas?
One crisp dollar bill is your salvation. That's all you've got to do. Give them a dollar for an empty sleeve and you can feel good for the rest of the day.
Yep, I absolutely concur. You are absolutely forgiven.
But even better, try and find a frame from the charity shop, from the thrift store, that you can frame the record in.
Oh, that's good. I've got that album, by the way. He's right. It's not great, but the cover's brilliant.
Bret Easton Ellis, isn't it? Adaptation of his novel, I think. Yeah, good book. Yeah. I've not seen the film, but I think the book is really good. When I was an edgy teenager, I was a big fan of Bret Easton Ellis. It was when he started doing books about talking Furbies that he slightly lost me. That was another gripping instalment of
Paul's Confessional Corner.
Right, let's end on a fun quiz. Even though someone sent me an absolute rotter who's doing mad things on Discogs, I was going to torment you with it, but I thought I'd save it for another week.
Yeah, let's have a nice one this time, and then I can be angry next time.
Okay, so we're going to carry on the quiz from last time, where you have to guess how many record shops there are in a particular country, and they go higher or lower.
And I did really pretty well last time, if I remember rightly.
You did absolutely appalling. This is much easier.
Okay.
So, Tim, how many record shops do you think there are in Japan?
So this is according to whom?
The same source as we used last time, the vinyl hub measurement. So it's user-submitted data.
Okay, because there are a lot of faded, dusty, old Japanese record shops that are still there, like our old record shops that we used to have in the 80s and 70s, that didn't close down in Japan, and they're still on back streets with crumbly cardboard signs with sellotape stuck over them saying what they are, and it's all kind of peeling off, and they're still there and they look exactly the same. And I don't know if they will all have been captured on this website, but with that in mind, I reckon that there are 1,000 record shops in Japan.
But there's 587, apparently.
Says you, but all right.
Anyway.
Okay, so that's our baseline.
That's our baseline.
Is that more or less than Myanmar?
That is more. And significantly more than Chile.
It's such a twat.
We're going to head to France next, Tim.
Ooh.
So, are there more or less record shops in France than there are in Japan?
Fewer.
That is the correct answer. There's 435 in France.
Imagine if I aced this, if I got all these right. What do I win if I get them all right?
I will give you a record.
Okay, here we go. Right, one for one.
We're going to head to Russia next. Does Russia have more or less record shops than France?
If you believe Discogs, the Russian Federation has a copy of every record ever released somewhere. Because if you find any record that's for sale on Discogs and you scroll down, there will be a copy there from the Russian Federation. It's so big. It's such a big country. Let's say it has... It probably doesn't, but let's say it has more than France.
No, it has less. It only has 88 record shops.
I knew it would have less, Paul.
We head to China now.
Right.
Are there more or less record shops in China than there are in Russia?
Ah, this is really hateful. So China is also quite a big country. I don't know if you knew that.
Very big country, yes, yes.
But I can't, you know, there's so much poverty there. They're not going to be buying records, are they? They're going to be buying, you know, wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Fewer than Russia.
Is the right answer. There's only 14 record shops. And I was due to go to China on business, and trust me, I looked and I was planning which ones to go to, and there were hardly any.
Yeah, that is surprising.
It was really tough to find, yeah.
There might be about that many in Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah, there's more than that in Hong Kong.
Mm.
We are going to head to India now, Tim.
Well, Bollywood records are a really big, popular thing, and when we've had them...
Mm-hmm.
And we've put them online, they have sometimes gone to India. So there's definitely a desire there for records. There must be more in India than in China.
No, there's less. There's only 10.
I'm so sceptical about that. I accept that this is what this source says, but I'm sceptical.
Well, let's head to Brazil next. Is it more or less than 10?
More.
Correct. It's 250.
Yeah, because I've seen documentaries about Brazilian record shops, and I could have counted more than 10 just in the documentary.
Well, if you go north from there and land in Canada, is that more or less than Brazil? You look really stumped now.
More. There has to be more. More.
There are more. 384. You nearly robbed yourself of a point there.
But that's still fewer than I would... I mean, in all these cases, I don't... How much can we trust this so-called website, Paul?
Well, let's head to the UK.
Oh, UK. I sort of refuse to believe that we have more record shops than Japan does. So what's our target? We've got to beat Canada, which was 300 and something.
Canada is 384, yeah.
Well, surely we'll sail past that. So higher.
It is higher. It's 862. Which is a lot more than Japan.
I am calling slight shenanigans because I'm just thinking of some of the ones that I go to in Japan, and I would put money on some of them not being on this website. Call me cocky.
Well, off air and for the next episode, look up a couple of them and see what you can find.
And if any of them are not on it, then I reject everything about this website and it has no value, which means technically, doesn't it, that I won... both of these quizzes?
No. Let's head to Germany, Tim.
Oh, now, does Germany have more or less than the UK? I think in the spirit of international rivalry and hatred,
mm-hmm.
Let's say Germany's got less so that we're number one.
It is less. It's 527.
Wow. Have you ever been to Germany record shopping? Because I never have.
Quite a few times.
Any good?
Astonishingly good. Yeah, brilliant, amazing. Cologne especially is fantastic.
No way.
So you can drive to Cologne. You can drive to Cologne and it through Belgium, skim Holland, and go to Cologne. And you can go to like Wally's Groove World on the way. You can go to, it's really cool. You can go to that Maastricht warehouse. You can stop in Aachen. It's a really good route for records. It takes like 5-6 hours.
Speaking of Holland, one thing that does strike me is how many records throughout the 70s and 80s were pressed in the Netherlands. If you look on Discogs or look on the back of a, you know, look yep. on the label of a thing, made in Holland, made in the Netherlands, and 60s even, I think. So does that mean that Holland is amazingly good for records then as well?
That was where the pressing plants were. It doesn't necessarily mean, because the Czech Republic press everything up, but there ain't much there.
Oh, that's a good point.
Last stop, Tim, the United States of America.
Higher, more higher, higher and more.
It is higher. Do you want to have a guess how many they've got?
Over 2,000.
It is over 2,000.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. 2,522.
It is 2,500. Oh, it's 2,518.
So I was four away. Oh, that's pretty good, Paul.
You were four away.
I take it back. I like that yes. website now. I value and respect the data that's on this website of record shops.
I think it's fairly accurate because the China stuff, it's that, because I was shocked how low it was. But then I remembered when I researched it at Google Map level, which so nothing to do, didn't use that site. I used Google Maps and I used blogs to find out where the record shops were.
And just nothing.
And in Shanghai, I think there were like 3 or something stupid, which is crazy.
I wonder if Chinese hipsters have to import everything then. Is there such a thing? Sure, well, there's a lot of Chinese millionaires. So where are the Chinese millionaires getting their Kanye West albums from?
I don't know, but there's a lot of Chinese Discog sellers who seem to have everything.
In cahoots with the Russians. Not only are they trying to interfere with our elections, they're trying to dominate our record market. All I'm saying, Paul, is don't trust them. That's all I'm saying. This has been a weirdly racist episode of the show. I don't know why. I'm very sorry, everybody.
Join us next time for less racism and more records on We
by
Records.